Hey guys, I'm Eric McLane.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go!
Welcome in, everybody, and happy Monday here on Gramlich and McLane. Crazy weekend in the ACC yet again. And we saw some really good things, things that we've kind of been waiting to see. We saw some things that made us scratch our heads a little bit. So we'll get into all of that. But please, before, you know, if you're just tuning in right now, before you're done or right when you're done and before you put your phone down, rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We would really, really appreciate it. And some of you guys have left some awesome reviews and we're just super thankful. So please do that if you can. And we have so much to get into today, Eric McLane. How was your weekend?
First, Kelly, I've got to give some breaking news again. We've got back-to-back guests. This is going to be, you know, kind of a really just certain thing that we have, something you guys can look forward to and expect on Wednesdays. We're going to have some really cool guests. And this Wednesday, we're going to have another great one. NFL Pro Bowler, Louisville Cardinal legend, Eric Wood. I really can't wait to jump in about Louisville. You know, they had their best game of the year. And of course, it's another offensive lineman. So they are welcome to the show. Cannot wait to get E. Wood on here.
Mac, do you know every offensive lineman in the world?
Yes, especially the really good ones like Mike Golic Jr. and Eric Wood.
You guys, you're such a tight-knit group. We have some guests lined up for the rest of football season, and then we're starting to think about basketball guests as well. These guests coming up, E. Wood is a big get. We're super excited about having Eric Wood on. Beyond him, some of these names that we are bringing in for our guests, I cannot wait for you guys to hear from them. So stay tuned. Stay tuned to social media. We'll keep you updated at Kelly Gramlich, at Eric McLane, to keep you posted on those guests. Mac, we saw a few ranked teams lose this weekend and drop out of the poll in the ACC, Virginia Tech and NC State. But I know you're still pretty hyped up because the ACC right now has four teams ranked in the top 15.
That's right, Kelly. We've got Clemson, 6-0. Of course, they stayed at number one. It was going to be a little bit interesting. You know, all the social media stuff that I saw, all the media on ESPN and some other channels was the Tigers struggled. And were they going to take a step down in the AP poll? But they handled business and really finished the game out strong. They stayed put at number one and really overwhelming votes. I think it was 52. Alabama got like 10 of the 62 votes. And then Notre Dame dropped down one spot. That was a little bit maybe expected just with Ohio State playing again. You know, I knew they would jump up pretty quickly. So Notre Dame comes in at four. We got Miami at 12 and then UNC at 15. All three ACC teams took a step backwards. I thought that was interesting, but again, you just have more people playing, more people get involved in the voting and things like that.
You know, Mac, that I'm curious about that. Of these teams that won, they dropped in UNC, Miami, Notre Dame. Just at the top with the Notre Dame, Ohio State situation, what do you make of that? Is that deserved? I mean, Notre Dame played probably their best game of the season and still dropped. Is that just because of the name on the jersey with Ohio State?
You know, I think there is a certain love affair that comes with Ohio State. And it was interesting enough that they decided to even keep them in the rankings at all when they weren't playing any games. You know, I thought that was kind of interesting. Like how even right now do we have Pac-12 teams ranked and people are not in this AP poll at all and they're playing and you haven't even seen these teams at all. It's super strange to me, but hey, I get it. You know, have a placeholder, if you will, for where you think they're going to go. But just this long in the season, I mean, we're in like week 8 or 9, you know, for some teams, and yet other teams that haven't even played are holding on to this spot and keeping being a placeholder where you think of some of the great smaller school programs that are doing really well right now. Liberty, I mean, they're 6-0. And they're not getting any love in the AP poll, which this could be the year that they should or could, but they're not because we're holding spots for teams that we have no idea what they're even going to look like. So I'm a little bit confused by that, Kelly. I'm also a little bit confused why we have two lost Big 12 teams ranked. I think that Iowa State, maybe there's a little bit of an argument for Iowa State. Oklahoma, don't see it at all, especially this year. So I'm really confused about that. But hey, I've said this a multitude of times. At the end of the day, the AP poll matters absolutely none. It's all about the college football, you know, poll when they release that for the playoff. And, you know, that'll be coming sooner than later, a month and a half or so.
I wish you guys could have seen the pain on Mac's face when he was talking about those Big 12 teams. And I agree. That's a frustrating thing to see at the bottom of the poll. I have to ask you one more question about the poll, and then we're going to get into our Big 3 breakdown. Your Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, Mac, top 20.
Come on. I tell you what, they are looking good. I love the offense. Their quarterback, you know, he didn't play, and he is a special, special player. With him not playing, I thought that they were going to be in trouble, but they pulled out a victory. Again, you're seeing culture. You're seeing team from those guys. And you know what's interesting enough, and I saw some people talking about this on Twitter. Could you imagine South Carolina if they switched coaching staffs? Like, how much better would the University of South Carolina be with that particular coaching staff from Coastal? And I agree. So it's really interesting that the second best team in the state of South Carolina resides in Myrtle Beach.
We're going to mention this pretty much as much as possible, I guess, on the program. But Mac, I don't disagree. I think that's a very interesting role reversal to discuss. Very interesting role reversal.
That's right.
All right, let's get into our Big 3 breakdown, three games we want to really dive into. And first and foremost, let's start with the team that you had on upset alert. I did as well. And the team that I shamed because they put me to sleep because they were so boring offensively against Louisville.
Silly gooses. What the heck were we thinking?
We have to give them credit. Number 3, Notre Dame, 45. Pittsburgh, 3. Notre Dame can score. Ian's books receivers really made plays for him. Pittsburgh made a lot of mistakes. There's no doubt about that. Mac, what were your overall takeaways from Notre Dame just trouncing Pittsburgh at Heinz Field?
Yeah, so I want to actually spend a little bit of time here because I really think that this was the first time that Notre Dame looked like a contender.
Yes.
We talked about it Saturday night on the huddle with what we saw from them executing at a very high level in all three phases of the game, offense, defense, and special teams was just overly impressed with Notre Dame. I think it starts up front. I think that is the highlight of this team. Their offensive line played lights out in pass protection. Really, really impressive stuff what I saw from them. I actually just went back and watched every single snap, from those guys, literally all five positions. They were switching games all night, picking up stunts really, really well, and just looked like the best offensive line unit in the country. I mean, and they're going against these sack leaders in America. It wasn't like this was some slouch opponent they were going against. This was the best at what they do. And they, I mean, Ian Book could have sat in the backfield and just, you know, read a novel. He could have written a novel. He had so much time, you know, to throw the ball. The lone sack that Notre Dame did give up to Ian Book was the running back's fault. The running back, you know, got blown up. And of course, Ian got sacked there. So that was the only, you know, fault. And it had nothing to do with the offensive line. On the other side, Pitt's defense stuffed the run game. We knew they'd do that. They literally try to cause chaos. They try to confuse you. They bring it from everywhere. They held Notre Dame's Kyron Williams to 2 yards per rush. I mean, outside of a couple of breakdown scrambles from Book, it would have been a lot worse when you talk about yards per carry, what Pitt was able to do. And then for Book, he passed the test, and a little bit of a pun there, but he passed his way into a win, and he did it with his arms. He checked off that list. He went for 300 yards, really looked impressive, 3 touchdowns through the air. But in that same breath, Kelly, Pitt dropped 4 interceptions. I'm talking about square in their hands, easy catches that could have changed the game, and they weren't able to do it. So you talk about what can this offense do against a great defense? We saw it. What can they do against a great defense that takes those opportunities and makes the most of those opportunities? Will be interesting to see. Looking at Notre Dame's defense, I think they're elite, Kelly, but you know, they just haven't been tested. And hey, if anybody can relate to what I just said, it's Clemson fans, it's Clemson players, Clemson people, because that's all we've heard from Clemson for the past couple of years. They haven't been tested. Well, they're playing and beating everybody on the schedule. Kyle Hamilton, safety for Notre Dame, elite. Jeremiah Owusu-Koamora, elite. Those two guys are ballers. They're going to be first round draft picks. Kyle's got to wait one more year, but Jeremiah, you know, obviously coming out this year. I think those guys are really, really special, and you know, they make a difference. So when you add all that up, if Notre Dame can play the way that they did against Pitt, and maybe even a little bit better, I think November 7th, when they you know, face the Tigers, can be a little bit competitive and really fun to talk about and watch.
It definitely has made that game look more interesting. And what I noticed about Notre Dame's offense, there was a lot of yards after catch, specifically to some of those bigger tight ends and some of the wide receivers too. And so they made Ian Book look good. Ian Book made some great throws, a few deep balls that he connected on. And I think that Ian Book, we undervalue how mobile he is. He is, even though that O-line is great, he is really good at avoiding the rush, at extending plays. He had one where he went across field to McKinley, I believe, and then he went and scored. So I think we have to give Ian Book credit there.
Right.
For how mobile he is, he can be. And look, his receivers and his skill guys finally made some plays. They finally got some yards after catch. It wasn't always all Ian Book's fault in these first couple games. So that was really good to see. And the defense was opportunistic. They created turnovers. Yellen just looked so overwhelmed for Pittsburgh, and week two of starting, I think that game would have been different with Kenny Pickett, but I still think Notre Dame wins pretty easily if they play like that.
No, you know, I think it is completely different with Pickett too. Having three interceptions hurts you. You know, Kenny Pickett is literally the heart and soul of this Pitt team, that they are so limited already. Then you take out, you know, their best player, which is your quarterback, and it's just, it's wild to see. I mean, obviously Pitt cannot run the ball. And then again, taking out your quarterback who has been there, done that, has proven that he can sling it all over the yard. You've got a guy coming in for his third start ever. You look at his first start, it's against USC. His second start, highly touted Miami. Now you're going against the number three team in the country in Notre Dame. So Yellen has had a tough, you know, three starts there. And it's just some quick growing up to do. I'm sure he'll be a great player when it's all said and done. But Pitt, without Kenny Pickett, we all probably should have known that this was going to be the outcome.
We should have. But there's just something about Pittsburgh. They make you trust them. You think, oh, okay, they're going to play someone close. They're going to threaten. And most of the time they do when they are healthy. But to your point, Mac, Notre Dame-Clemson just got a lot more interesting. Cannot wait for that one. Notre Dame plays Georgia Tech this Saturday on Halloween. Clemson plays Boston College. And then the two will face off in South Bend on Saturday, November 7th. Quick little tease before we move on to Louisville, Florida State. We will have a very, very exciting guest for Clemson Notre Dame week. So stay tuned for that one.
It's me. It's Eric Macklin. I played at Clemson. I'm going to be the guest. I'm just kidding. We've got a cool one. It's going to be a lot of fun, guys.
You caught us.
You're not going to want to miss it.
He played against Notre Dame back in 2015, so it would make sense. All right, on to game number two of our big three. And this was the Louisville-Florida State game in Louisville. Louisville just runs away with this one, 48-16. It was really good. You know, we're not rooting for anyone here, but just from Louisville's perspective, they hadn't won an ACC game yet. They lost some close ones. They just played Notre Dame really tough. They go out there and put up 48 points. Tutu Atwell was excellent. Malik Cunningham looked really good. Louisville just ran the ball well. And I think it also showed, Mac, what we were thinking about FSU. Did they have the maturity as a program to get that win over UNC and then the next week do the same thing? And we did not see that from Florida State.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's what we wanted to see, Kelly, was could you put it together? Was this a turning point for FSU or was it a fluke? Starting to look like it was a little bit of a fluke. Those guys were juiced up, played out of their minds, and really had a great game and got a W, really a great half, and got a W against, you know, the number five team in the country. Came out this week and just got absolutely housed. Offense like crazy from Louisville. That's what we expected to see. I went on the huddle. I called them the most disappointing team in the ACC. But I said, this offensive coordinator, these coaches will get it turned around. They're too good. They have too much talent to just let that happen. And that's exactly what we saw. 569 yards of offense, Kelly. It was fantastic. You mentioned two out of the three, the three-headed monster between Cunningham, Atwell, Hawkins, just, I mean, absolutely balled out. And really, Cunningham pretty much played a perfect first half. He was 13 of 14, 165 yards, two touchdowns. I mean, just lights out. Went on to continue to have a really good game. Tutu Atwell, we mentioned last week on the show, Kelly, that just the explosion wasn't there. Well, what did Tutu do? He just averaged close to, 44, 43 yards per catch. That's explosion if I've ever seen it. So Tutu went for over 100 yards, a touchdown. And then Javian Hawkins, I mean, a guy who just not fell off, but just hadn't had a game like this yet. And he just casually, you know, went for 174 yards, three touchdowns. Louisville got that stretch zone play going. That is the basis of everything they do. All their play actions come off of that. It's their base run and outside zone, and really just sets the tone. And that's what happened. Hawkins averaged 11 yards per run. That's the type of explosion we came to expect from this team. Defense did enough. You know, they stepped up big time and really were able to just really perform defensively. You know, they didn't shut anything down. They contained them. Florida State's rushing attack still looked pretty good. But overall, you come to expect a little bit more defensively.
Definitely, Mac. And, you know, I'm looking at Louisville here. And I know they had a really disappointing start, as you just talked about, and you had them as your most disappointing team in the ACC, which I would put them on there as well. I think that was a really good characterization. You look at their five games remaining: Virginia Tech, Virginia, Syracuse, BC, Wake. We're going to talk about Wake, and we're going to talk about BC, of course, but Wake Forest looked really good. But still, I think all those games are winnable for Louisville. And what would a finish to the year, what would a really good finish to the year, do for Louisville moving forward and trying to go into year three for Satterfield?
Yeah, you know, I think at least winning, four of those is what you want to look at. Now, of course, you had higher expectations. Starting off 0-4 in ACC play is really tough and something you probably had no insight to, no expectations to, but here you are. So I think competing, keep seeing this offense look the way it does, and then defensively, just try to keep getting 1% better each and every week. Make the adjustments necessary, whether it's personnel, putting people in the right space, getting into your calls quicker, you know, whatever it takes. But I think Louisville just has to keep getting better on that defensive side of the ball. Offense looks like they figured it out and they're going to be taking care of business.
Yeah, back last week, the Louisville held Notre Dame to 12 points. That's looking pretty good right now. So maybe, I know you said, Mac, no moral victories. You said no moral victories, but maybe Louisville did take something from that performance because they looked extremely confident even from the jump against Florida State.
Yeah, again, as a player, as a coaching staff, you know, again, just figuring it out, trying to keep build on your performances and to hold a team that, you know, again, Pittsburgh, a fantastic defense in the ACC, just got put 45 points on them. You held them to 12. So again, got to be feeling good about it. But Kelly, we're not celebrating losses on this podcast.
I know.
I'm telling you that.
I know, Mac. And that's why when I said that, I was like, I'm not sure how Mac's going to feel about this. But I think that did something for them. That did something for them in that game. All right, Mac, a team that you have seen in person and the other team is a team whose quarterback you have a bromance with. Wake Forest and Virginia Tech. Wake Forest wins this game 23-16. Really impressive showing by Wake's running game. Beal Smith and Kenneth Walker, they were great. Boogie Basham was a monster, had a big sack at the end of the game. And, you know, with Virginia Tech, and Mac, this is what I saw specifically. I think that Virginia Tech's secondary showed it was still a little bit of a liability. You missed a couple field goals, of course, but this is a disappointing loss for Virginia Tech.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And again, I like analytics. I really trust what my eyes tell me, what shows up on film. And when those two mesh together, Kelly, it's almost a virtual certainty. And with Virginia Tech, with all that in mind, Virginia Tech was really just going to run the ball all over Wake. That's what I saw, and that's what the numbers confirmed. And I would have bet the house that Wake Forest was not going to be able to hold Khalil Herbert, who was averaging like a million yards per touch, to 4.6 yards a carry. I would have guaranteed you I would have bet everything I own, which is why I'm not a degenerate and why I do not bet, because you lose. Because Wake Forest played out of their minds. I mean, I know they gave up 200 yards rushing, but it was collectively for a team that's averaging like 350 rushing. They did a fantastic job and really held their own, was very excited to see just the attack, the guys flying all around the field on defense, was overly impressive. And then offensively, You know, I figured they could score with Virginia Tech. I thought it might actually turn into a shootout. Sam Hartman did a good enough job, was very efficient. But, man, it was all about that running attack. Christian Beal-Smith, Kenneth Walker III, we mentioned it. They just trade off who's going to go for 120, 130-plus. This week it was Christian Beal-Smith's turn. Was just really, really a great passing running attack from Wake Forest. And I've got to get a little bit of love here from Nick Anderson, just a guy who is a walk-on defensive back, true freshman, to go for a hat trick and to have three picks, led the team in tackles with 11 tackles. I mean, that what a picture-perfect game in the biggest game of the year so far, win-wise, for Wake Forest. Truly amazing to that guy. Huge shout-out. You know, love when people take advantage of their opportunities. And make the most out of it.
He could possibly be in the running for our Athlete of the Week and our ACC of the Week coming up on Wednesday. So stay tuned for that. Mac, I also read that Nick Anderson is from Virginia, which I find very interesting, the fact that he picked off Hendon Hooker three times.
So he was just on level 10. I mean, he wanted to prove a point. Virginia Tech probably didn't recruit this guy. And here he is just absolutely balling out. Going crazy, leading the team in tackles, like I said, three picks. What a game. Congratulations to that young man.
What did you think was the main issue for Hendon Hooker? How do you explain his performance in that game?
You know, it was interesting enough, right? He had over 200 yards passing, almost 100 yards rushing. So statistically, not terrible. QBR, not great, because he threw three picks. Yeah. And, you know, the last one at the end of the game, kind of a desperation pick. I don't want people to look too far into that one. But, you know, the others, it just the ball sailed a little high. Guys out of position, trying to force some things. And that was the biggest question mark for us, Kelly, right? Is we knew Virginia Tech could run. We thought that they'd turn into a more of a balanced attack, more of a balanced team with Hendon Hooker passing the ball. Can you throw, and can you throw effectively when you need to? It's great to be able to run, but when you're behind, which Wake Forest did a great job getting up early, 17-10, 10-0 at one point on Virginia Tech, now it changes your offense. You can't run the ball the way you want to. It eats up too much clock. You've got to be able to score, move the ball downfield. Just, again, really thought Wake Forest did a fantastic job defensively.
I agree. No doubt. So we'll see if Virginia Tech can build on this and get past this, and Hendon Hooker can continue to play well and have the kind of year we all thought he could. Let's get to our speed round. Four more games we have to talk about and recap.
Speed round.
Exactly. We're going to get to the Clemson game because I found that one super interesting, and Miami as well. Let's start with the game that featured two ranked teams. Number 14, North Carolina, blows out number 23, NC State, 48-21. UNC, this was so good to see from the Tar Heels, because that loss to Florida State, we'll just call it what it was, Mac, was embarrassing. They shouldn't have lost that game. NC State didn't have Devin Leary, and they missed him. There's no doubt about it. But UNC came out firing from the jump. The offense looked like it hadn't missed a beat, even though it did not play well at all in Tallahassee in the first half. Mac, how do you explain how do you think about UNC? That's the better question. How do you think about UNC right now? You look at their wins, which are all pretty good, but then you look at that one loss. How do you rationalize what this program is right now?
Yeah, I think that one loss was just, it was a fluke. It truly was, especially when you see what Florida State just did and now what UNC is doing on offense, you know, just getting right back to who they are. 578 total yards of offense against a rival, a ranked rival. Thought that was a really big deal. So I'm still all aboard the UNC train. I think that they have just a really fun offense, a very explosive offense. And that rushing attack that they have, too. Again, we mentioned it earlier on this show that they have the best duo in the country, and that's just been proven time and time again. Javonte Williams there and Michael Carter, just special players, do-it-all players. If you need a clutch moment, something big to happen, they can come up big for you. And, of course, again, Sam Howell just delivering strikes, was very impressive in the run game as well, had a couple of big runs, just escaping and extending plays. But again, that's what you want to see. You want to see that response from North Carolina, and that's exactly what we got.
They have Virginia this coming weekend, then Duke, then Wake, and then back-to-back games with Notre Dame, that's at home, and Miami on the road. So we'll learn a lot about UNC in those back-to-back games. I think the next three, no doubt about it, they should win, but they can't afford to stumble again. If they want to achieve their goals, which to me is playing in the ACC championship game, they have to be perfect.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Kelly. I think where we are is at a point where if you have two losses, you're kind of out of this race. It's looking like you have to be undefeated with what Notre Dame's doing, but expecting that they will eventually lose to Clemson in November or vice versa, you have a shot there if you just have one loss to be in a really good position. So I'm with you. I think that they have to continue to play at this high level. We saw their defense also step up. I want to mention that quickly. There was a little bit of question mark about the run defense. You know, were their stats, you know, kind of fluffed up? Were they, you know, not going against guys who run the ball? That was a little bit of a question. And they, you know, again, they gave up 34 rushing yards. They were able to really contain NC State from running the ball, which I thought that's what NC State was going to have to do to win. So kudos to that defense. I'm right there with you. I think that they've done a great job and just have to continue to do so.
Okay, Mac. Number one, Clemson beat Syracuse 47-21. This game was a 46-point spread. And I thought Brent Venables had a great quote after the game. He says, you know, this is D1 football. No team is a 50-point underdog to another team. That's just not having enough respect for the game. And it sure looked like maybe Clemson looked sleepy at times. I don't think that they didn't respect the opponent, but they just looked sleepy. And defensively, I thought Syracuse did some good things where, you know, they play a 3-3-5 base defense. So they're really trying to just sit guys in that secondary and trying to make Trevor Lawrence struggle a bit because they have so many guys back there, and Clemson doesn't have that go and get it kind of wide receiver. T. Higgins moved on to the NFL. Justin Ross is injured. They don't exactly have that jump ball guy, and some of the guys they do are a lot younger. How do you explain some of, and again, Clemson still won by 26 points, but Mac, how do you explain some of Clemson's passing struggles in that game?
You know, I think you were absolutely right, Kelly. You hit the nail on the head with what they run on defense. It's very difficult with that many bodies back there. You're thinking of having five DBs when you're used to maybe four, and just where they are, different positions, and especially with man-to-man situations, you have a couple of extra bodies floating around with how they do with their linebackers and different guys there. So the big thing was that Syracuse really limited Clemson's big play ability. They had eight pass breakups, which is tremendous. Their cornerbacks just played really, really lights out and were able to get their hands on the football, knock it out. Amari Rodgers had a huge catch downfield right when he turned over to secure the catch. DB just popped it out. Garrett Williams popped it out. And then, of course, Garrett had the pick six, first time in Trevor Lawrence's life, I think, ever. So they really played well. Had a great scheme going into it, but the Tigers, you know, just too much, overwhelmed them at the end of the day. The defense, I thought, played really well for Clemson. You say, well, how's that so? They have 21 points. Where if you think about it, one touchdown was off a blocked field or a blocked punt, put the defense in an adverse situation. The other was a pick six, as I just mentioned. So you also had a defense that did not have Skowski, who puts your defense into position, calls all the plays for you, gets everybody lined up. You did not have Big Tyler, a defensive tackle. He's a guy that again is an All-American candidate, a guy that is really going to change the game for you up front. And then in Williams, another defensive tackle that's a big-time starter for you. So not the defense that we're used to seeing at all from Clemson personnel-wise. A lot of young guys came in. And hey, when your son, as a defensive coordinator, when your son is the leading tackler, I think you're feeling okay about it.
Yeah, I'm sure Brent Venables was loving that. There's no doubt about that, Eric McElhain. Clemson gets the win. That's the bottom line. And you bring up the pick that Trevor Lawrence threw. Adding that onto North Carolina game and the Virginia Tech game this weekend, this was the weekend of the tip pick. You know what I mean? There were so many balls that were tipped by the wide receiver and then picked off. We saw that in many games this weekend in the ACC.
Kelly, you know, I saw that too, and that's a big thing. If they're tipped, it's got to be picked, and sometimes it's picked to the house. So it was great to see, you know, cornerbacks getting their hands on the football, making some big plays, because that's important. Again, we saw Pitt not take advantage of that, and it could have changed the game. Other teams did. I'm right there with you. I noticed that all weekend.
Good point about Pittsburgh. I think that could have changed that game tremendously. Two more games left in our speed round. Boston College, your Boston College Eagles, Mac, 48, Georgia Tech, 27. Georgia Tech, it seems like they were not ready to go mentally after the Clemson beatdown. Boston College looked great. They put up some points. The defense looked decent. I think that's what everyone's concern was, of course, after the Virginia Tech game. BC can definitely build on this win.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Phil Jurkovec just playing really, really well. But Kelly, the most important thing about this game, offensive line, move the ball, rushing attack. We saw it from Boston College. I'm so thankful. I'm so happy David Bailey was inserted back into this offense. And I hope that, you know, this success, you know, running the ball 44 times, rushing for 260 plus, I hope that gives the play callers, the coaching staff, I hope it just gives them confidence to call that and to say, hey, we can do this. We have an attack. We feel good about it situationally, where we can do it, where we can't. Because this coming weekend, you've got a really big challenge. And if you cannot do both of these things successfully, because Clemson's going to take one of them away, it's going to be a really long night for you. So it was good to see, you know, before Boston College heads to the Valley and takes on the Tigers, their offense looks like it's hitting another gear that we haven't seen yet.
They've shown us they can pass it. The fact that they're looking a little more balanced is really, really good news for the Eagles. The last game in our speed round, Mac, number 11, Miami holds on to beat Virginia 19-14. It felt like Miami got a little conservative at the end of the game. They were up 19-7, and then UVA scored and kind of got back into it. Brennan Armstrong was back. That's good for Virginia. They still played multiple quarterbacks. Are you concerned at all about Miami and just the fact that they put up 19, they were a little sluggish offensively? Is there any concern from Eric McLain with the Canes?
You know, they are the running attack is such an integral piece of Miami. I think that's a big deal that they ran the ball 48 times, only got 122 yards. That's right at about 2.5 yards per rush. That's a little bit concerning, but weather was a thing. Virginia finally started stepping up and playing the defense that we think that they're capable of. And I think what's overwhelming and the overarching piece of this game to me is how efficient De'Arik King was on the deep ball. He was lights out. He had 7 completions over 25 yards. Was really impressed to see that. That's what I needed to see from him. He was extremely accurate, 70%, 322 yards passing, only the one touchdown. But Kelly, if you ask me, do I want the 4-touchdown game that he had against Pitt where he was very sloppy, very inefficient, or this game where he's throwing 70% and only had 1 touchdown? I'm taking this game all day because he looked fluid. His wide receivers were making big-time plays. You look at guys like Mike Hartley, seniors, guys that have been here for a while, stepping up huge for 170 yards. That's great to see. Getting these guys on the same page, offense getting in sync. Very excited about Miami moving forward. We saw a little bit more of that pre-Clemson offense where there's explosion, big things are happening. Kelly, I think you're feeling a little bit better than the score reflected about Miami right now.
Okay, good. You talked me off the ledge a little bit there, Mac, because I do think they went conservative late. The defense looked really, really good. And you're right, De'Arik King was airing it out. He was releasing some deep balls, and that is encouraging news just to see Miami get even better and De'Arik King get even more comfortable with his wide receivers. Mac, we just broke down all those games. It was a crazy weekend. It was a fun weekend. Next weekend, we're going to have some marquee games as well. But first, before we get to our preview episode this coming Friday, we will have a special guest on Wednesday. And of course, we'll do our ACC of the week. Eric Wood will join us. Mac and E. Wood, both Erics, are going to nerd out about offensive line. I'm just going to laugh along and pretend I know all the cool jargon and lingo they're using. But we can't wait to have E. Wood on the pod.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Guys, thanks for listening. If you haven't already, go to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. Subscribe, drop us a rating. We greatly appreciate it. But until next time, we'll see y'all.